It's time to think big with Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and No Good Lying Through Your Tooth, Tall Alaska Tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Coming to you from the studios of AM 750 KFQD and 103.7 FM and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com, I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve and some Big Alaska Show friends. It's our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder, joining us with more science to blow our minds, including talking hummingbirds in Alaska. Who knew? Plus, we have a tall Alaska tale. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
And good morning, welcome to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy and co-host, Mike Ford. Mike, good morning.
Hello, Uncle Steve. I've got my sunglasses on because it is a glorious day in Alaska.
You need to really hydrate.
Okay. Jeez. You'll need to add more prune juice to your diet, Uncle Steve.
Are you kidding me? I'll tell you just a... When I had my hernia surgery, the doctor suggested prune juice. And, you know, I thought, why? Who knew?
Did Amy send the doctor a nice letter?
Amy's going to hound him with a baseball bat. So, hey, listen, we've got a really interesting show. We've got Dr. Gordon Snyder. He talks about hummingbirds in this show. When I came across this, Mike, we had to air this show because our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder, it just demonstrates what a true scientist he is.
You know, and I've been wondering, you have so many great interviews with Gordon, and you've known him a while. How did you meet Gordon Snyder?
Interestingly, I wanted to go ski in Steamboat Springs, and I was driving through Fort Collins, Colorado, and it was a spring day, beautiful day. There was no snow at all. There was no ice, no, you know, it was dry as a bone. And a woman rear-ended my car at a light. And I just happened to know some people who were going to graduate school at Colorado State. And they said, why don't you come stay with us overnight while you get it fixed up or get the insurance taken care of. So I went over there, and Gordon Snyder came over because he was a personal friend of theirs. Well, interestingly, Gordon and my brother, was teaching at the University of Alaska at that time, and one of his colleagues named P.J. Hill, who was also taught there, P.J. had gone to college with Gordon down at the University of Idaho and played handball, and they were good buddies. Well, P.J. during the summer had a commercial fishing site in Kodiak, invited Gordon to come up and my brother. So they spent the week or so together at his commercial fishing site. And so that was the summer before. So Gordon met my older brother before he met me.
Ah.
Gordon was with the U.S. Forest Service in Fort Collins at the time, and he was doing research or doing some project on water quality, invited me to go on one of his little trips with him, and we hit it off, and he taught me so much, Mike. I mean, it was like having an older brother, and it was just terrific. We were also runners at the time. He liked to run marathons and long distance run, and I was doing the same. I was working up towards a marathon when I had my knee accident. But we went and ran the Beta Breakers race in San Francisco. And we'd go to these different places where he had seminars and would run. So I would always come up from Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I was living at the time, to go up to Fort Collins to visit him. And he's a little older than my older brother, but what a remarkable, true scientist he is. And all these projects I was exposed to. Anyway, it's a real pleasure to have him as our science guy on the Big Alaska Show. There's so many more stories to talk about, and I wish I could. And sometime I'll share more about him. Of course, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way. Folks, the secret to doing a radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger blend than Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. and that's why it's a preferred coffee for scientists. Early morning is not exactly thinking's best friend, and scientists have to think. Not only do they have to think deep thoughts without going into a deep sleep. Enter Big Alaska Show Blend to the rescue. Made from the shavings of schist, a lamellar medium-grade metamorphic rock mined from a remote mountainside in Alaska, Big Alaska Show Blend is powerful and tastes like schist. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed swill and scientists have such deep thoughts, they can crack the code to understanding teenagers. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt, Big Alaska Show Blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Pour me a cup, it's time to get up and face the world, my friend. Pour me a cup, I can't get enough of that Big Alaska Show Blend.
And that's how we roll here on the Big Alaska Show at AM 750 KFQD, 103.7 FM, and we're streamed worldwide at KFQD.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve along with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. Today we're featuring our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder. We went back and found some interviews on Gordon about hummingbirds. Now, hummingbirds, in my growing up in Alaska, were never around. But they do appear in southeast Alaska, and as the climate has been warming, we're seeing them further north, such as in Anchorage. So we asked Gordon about hummingbirds. This is what he has to say. Over the years, we've spoken with a lot about all sorts of wildlife, but one we haven't spoken about, Mike, is the hummingbird. What do you know about hummingbirds?
Well, I remember Grandma Ford used to have, like, multiple hummingbird feeders on her porch, but that was in Washington, and I can't say, since I've been up here, that I've actually seen a hummingbird. Maybe once in Homer.
Yeah.
But I don't remember seeing too many hummingbirds.
It was a displaced?
Yes. Probably got hit by a wind and gusted up this way or something.
He took the wrong turn in Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that's why we have the science guy. He has a particular interest in hummingbirds, I discovered. But for the most part, it is rare, certainly in these parts. The hummingbirds, we've been reaching southeast Alaska at best, but that's changing, as our science guy will tell us another thing science about Alaska. Please give a warm Big Alaska welcome to Dr. Gordon Snyder.
Hello.
Well, I'll tell you, man, we had a rough start
Hello?
This morning.
Are you hearing us now?
Yeah, I got you now, guys.
Well, it was just as well you were only hearing one of us, because the other one of us was just dying on the air. So we wanted to reduce 50% of your pain.
You saved half of my day.
So we've been talking about hummingbirds in the past. And one thing I did notice, there's a flower display here in Anchorage, Gordon, that is down by the Westchester Lagoon. And every year they put up this little floral kind of arrangement that the city puts together, and one of them one year was a hummingbird, and that really surprised me, because hummingbirds were never really part of Alaska, or at least for me. And maybe it's because I lived in South Central Alaska, not Southeast. But are there hummingbirds in Alaska?
Well, there are, and you're right, in the Southeast section. They're kind of like whales, okay? They are migratory, except for a few, okay? And we could talk about those, and that's probably the kind Mike saw when he was mentioning about his grandma's house. These guys, you know, with the whales, well, they pretty well left Alaska now. They're headed to Hawaii or down the coast to Mexico for their calving and their, party grounds.
Right.
So what happens with hummingbirds is they centralize in the southwest down through Central America, okay? Mm-hmm. And as the winter comes, they accumulate and head down through South America. So they're actually migrating several thousand miles as they move their way from Central America or, you know, south of northern Mexico in that area. They move up into Canada, up through the west, all the way through the U.S., and some of them follow the coast. And as they're moving up the coast, that's one sort of species that favors that side. On the other side of the Rockies, the Continental Divide, just inland, there are three or four more other species that migrate north up into Canada. And they're doing the same thing that whales do. They're migrating for territory, for food and resources and habitat, so that they can nest and raise their young. So what's happened is I've noticed over the few years that I've been taking pictures of them is that there are waves of these that come through, like my place in Idaho, and not so much in Seattle because we're on the coast, but these waves of them are as they're migrating north into their territories for breeding and, you know, spending the summer, and when they return. So their window of being around where we can see them is usually from about, you know, early spring to, like now, mid-September. They've all said the same thing the whales have. Goodbye, winter's coming, we're headed to the tropics.
When I've been looking at, like, migrating birds, and we'll see flocks of them with these, you can tell that I'm not a birder because I'm going these things and doodads and that kind of thing.
You're used to seeing the waterfowl. I mean, they migrate, snow geese and ducks, and a lot of the shorebirds will migrate just to stay out of the frozen winter.
Right.
So it drives a lot of animals, and, you know, it's a really interesting thing, a field in biology to study. I'm not an expert in it at all. I just kind of like noticing what they're doing because it's so obviously different than the animals that are resident.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of stick around. But even then, some of them pretty much hibernate for the winter, you know? So it's the wildlife's way of coping with the season. So that brought up the question that you said about, well, we don't see many up in Anchorage area. There are a few sightings in the Anchorage area now of hummingbirds, and they are, what do they call, variant migrants, okay? So that they're rare, but they're migrating farther and farther north. They're always pushing their territory. And so as the Arctic is melting, that means that the whales are moving farther up into the Arctic for their feeding grounds. And actually what's happening with the hummingbirds is they're projecting that they're moving farther and farther north in their territorial migration. So who knows, in some years in the future, you guys may have a population of migrating hummingbirds that have frequently come in and out of Anchorage. The amazing thing about these guys is that their size, and yet they fly thousands of miles.
I've seen these migrating birds when we've been stateside, and just you'll see just tons of them, and the sky is just black. It's phenomenal to watch. Do hummingbirds go as a flock? I mean, how high up do they fly? Do they hop along?
Good set of questions. You know, when you look at some of the bigger ones, they're about the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
And the smaller ones are about the size of the three digits on your little finger.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I call them nature's jet pilots because of the way they fly. But they are not friends with each other. The only time that they participate with each other in a group, and that's when the males are fighting for their territory, they don't participate. But if a female comes in, then that's, you know, the same old thing as with whales or, you know, elk or anybody else. The men are chasing those pretty ladies.
Yep.
That's the only time they mate up is when they're in that mating season. After that, they completely divorce themselves from each other and they go about their business. The males continue to be territorial. And the females do all of the nest building, incubate the eggs, and raise the chicks in the nest.
What amazes me about hummingbirds is so beautiful and delicate. And they're so small, but they're such big jerks. We'll find out more about that when we come back here in the Big Alaska Show at AM 750 KFQD 103.7, and we're streamed at KFQD.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. You can call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
We've got Dr. Gordon Snyder. We've been talking about hummingbirds, something that we haven't discussed in the past. And Gordon, you're a hummingbird enthusiast, and even though you said you're not an expert on them, you are a true scientist, and you study phenomenon. And what is it that drew you to them? Why did you take such an interest in them, Gordon?
Well, I tell you, just being an outdoor guy, you know, and I used to do a little hunting and all that stuff when duck season came around. Growing up around the outdoors like that, I've always noticed them. But at some point, I ran across an article that talked about how they can fly. The article sort of just explained that, period, these guys are the best flyers of all the birds in the world because they can hover, they can fly forward, backward, up, down. They can just do these enormously fantastic things that other birds just cannot do. They can do things like insects do. A regular bird's wings are kind of like when you're in a rowboat and you row, you know, you can go forward and you pull back. And that's what all their joints and their shoulders are like, is for that reach forward with the wings, and they scoop the wing and the wind, and they pull it back. That's how they go forward, just like you would if you were paddling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the amazing thing about a hummingbird is their shoulders, let's say, not just the forward and back motion like a regular bird, but they have the shoulder motion like you do as a human. You can actually move your arms forward, backwards, up, around. You can make a circle with your arms. And these guys can do that with their wings. That got me started. And then once I did that, I was messed around, and I took a few pictures of them and realized that, oh, my goodness, these guys are running at a frequency hundreds of times faster than what we do in our life. And the only reason that you can really see some of these characteristics is when you take a picture of them or a video and you slow it down and you start to see the motion of the wings and how amazing it is what they do when they're flying. I mean, literally, when you see them just hovering dead still and their wings are going just so fast they're a blur, well, as a science person, you say, wow, I wonder how fast those suckers are going. So with your camera, you start increasing the speed and your shutter speed and all this stuff until you can stop it down. And most of the good photos that I've taken where the wings are sort of almost stopped down, you know, while they're in flight, is between 1/1500th of a second to 1/4000th of a second.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so that gives you a snapshot, and it freezes the wings at that moment in time. Well, while the wings are going like completely crazy, their head is absolutely motionless. In fact, the way I judge whether a photo is any good is they have this perfectly black, beautifully mirroring eye. And the little white spot from the daylight, from the sky or whatever, shows up as a very distinct dot. And so here they are flapping their wings at 1,200 beats a minute, let's say. And their head is so perfectly still that in that eye, that little spot is so clear that if I expand it, you know, like blow it up 200 times on the photo, you can actually see the reflection of the forest trees in its eye. So not only can they just fly at this incredible wing beat speed, when they're hovering, they're absolutely motionless. It's just incredible to me.
I'm curious with this metabolism, though, so quick. What's their lifespan? Is it short?
Actually, it is pretty short. They live 3 to 4 years, and they're really, there are some banding studies on them, but they're very rare, and because catching them and banding them and then, you know, a year later when they return, it's difficult to find banded ones, but there is some evidence from the banding as to how far they travel on their migration. When you think about how they do that, the amazing thing is that their heart rate, to be able to pump the blood and circulate and move those wings about 1,250 cycles a second, their heartbeat is over 1,200 beats a minute when they're flying. Okay?
Wow.
I mean, that's like the highest heartbeat of any animal other than some little pygmy shrew or some, you know, little rodent somewhere. Honest to Pete, that kind of makes you wonder, well, geez, how can they survive? Because our heart rate when we're really busting and exercising is 110, 120, 130. Well, just times that by, 10. And so, you're out and you want to do your mile to get a little calorie burn up. Well, they're doing 10 times that.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
Welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve here along with my good buddy and co-host Mike Ford. We're featuring our guest, our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder, and he's been talking about hummingbirds. Now, Gordon is a true scientist, and if you've tuned in to any of our shows, you know he's talked about whales, he's talked about frogs, he's talked about all sorts of things. And so what we thought we'd do is spring on him one of our tall Alaska tales, and what's cool about this, it really shows off his analytical science mind. You know, you talked about banding and studying their migration habits. Mike and I, we have something for you, Gordon, that I think it just fits perfectly for you. So that's why it's time to play our
Tall Alaskan Tales, Tall Alaskan Tales. No good lying through your tooth, Tall Alaskan Tales.
We're going to play this for you, and you tell us if you think this is the truth or a no good lying through your tooth, tall Alaska tale. Let's go ahead and play it, Mikey. A relatively small hummingbird with a slender, narrowly straight bill, the rufous hummingbird is the most widely distributed hummingbird in North America. It generally winters in Mexico, possibly as far south as Panama, and has the longest migration route of all U.S. hummingbirds. Migration routes have been mapped through a process called banding, where a tiny band, 1/116th by 1/4 inch, is marked with a letter and 5 numbers is attached to the hummingbird. A network of professional and citizen scientists recapture these tagged creatures and use the marked information to help understand these hummingbirds' migration habits. In January 2010, a 1-year-old female rufous hummingbird was caught and banded in Florida, then recaptured in Alaska 6 months and 3,530 miles later, just outside Cordova, Alaska. It was the longest migration of a hummingbird ever documented. But what makes this story so unique is the hummingbird tagor from Florida and the hummingbird taggee in Cordova not only were active birders, they knew each other. Not only did they know each other, they had at one time been engaged to be married. However, they were no lovebirds, as their relationship ended when they couldn't resolve where they were going to live. Fred wanted to stay in Alaska, while Katie didn't want to spend another winter in Alaska. When they broke off their relationship, Katie reportedly told Fred he could spend the winter studying hummingbirds, but she was going to Florida to study snowbirds. Is this a truth or a no-good lying through your tooth tall Alaska tale?
What? Okay.
What?
Well, let's start with the front end of this little tall tale, okay? The banding, that's the way this happened. So catching several hundred hummingbirds in the south, and they put the bands on them, and then as they migrate north, getting all the way up to Anchorage is what they call a variant, a rare variant. In other words, this guy was maybe like one of the old trappers that went went up into Alaska in the 1870s, you know. It was just up there. Now, whether or not, I mean, number one, to go from Florida up there is a remarkable feat, right? I mean, just think of the distance and the size of the bird. Okay, you got a bird that's an ounce and a half flying 3,500 miles. Okay, give me a break. Well, that happened, all right? We'll give that a go. However, that probability of then finding that bird 3,500 miles up there is really, 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 really low. So, probability of it being found by somebody's ex-boyfriend or current boyfriend makes it kind of really, 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 really low. So, my sort of statement is, it's a halfway tall Alaska. Three parts pretty true, yeah. And the last part goes off into the wandering big Alaska tail. That'd be my guess.
Okay, all right. Well, it does show the strength of Dr. Gordon Snyder's scientific mind.
The fact that he actually gave it that much time.
Yeah, right.
That's because I was trying to think of an answer.
We do have an answer for this. Let's play it, Mike. Not surprisingly, Fred and Katie never were engaged. Truth is, they couldn't stand each other. Although birders, their disagreement centered around Fred's technique for banding the hummingbirds. He used a stun gun to capture them. So... But there was one banded in Florida and did fly the 3,530 miles and was found up in Prince William Sound near Cordova.
You know, and if there's a million Rufus hummingbirds or 2 million Rufus hummingbirds and one goes that far, chances are that there are more making their way up there. Mm-hmm. Because the amazing thing about these little critters is they have the ability to remember location. Like when they're flittering around and they come into, like here in our area in Washington or over in Idaho, once you set up a feeder, they'll go off and they'll remember where that feeder is and come back to it. Just like they remember where the favorite luscious flowers are or certain areas where they are gathering insects. They have the ability to sort of remember, and that then is mapped so that if one went up there once and then if another one went up there and it happened to be a female, now you might get a mating pair, and that pair, those little juveniles, would then begin to remember that migration route.
Now, you have these bird feeders right around your little studio. I always call it your laboratory. You call it your studio, but it's a laboratory.
Okay. Right.
Do you recognize any of them that return look familiar to you?
In the winter, most of the hummingbirds have left for the Southwest and south of Mexico. However, there is one species that lives along the coast in Washington. It's called the Anna's hummingbird, and that's the one with this beautiful red fluorescent cap the males have. And they stick around, but if you put out a feeder or two for the winter, then they become sort of resident around the feeder because that's a source of food that they're going to depend on.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you commit to keeping a feeder out for the winter for these little guys to overwinter, then you really have a responsibility to keep it going because, you know, long around February when there's nothing for them to eat other than a few insects, they're going to need that feeder.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
But for the most part, they remember the feeders. They'll migrate, but strangely enough, and I have a friend down in San Diego who has them nesting in her patio every year, and they come back to the same place to nest. So it's kind of like once they find a territory and it's comfortable and they raise their young, the young and the new families are going to start populating that.
The fluorescent, the colors as they change, it's fluorescent and they're absolutely gorgeous.
They are.
Like a neon sign.
And not only the feathers on their head, but the feathers on their back, they turn iridescent green. And it's a very interesting phenomena. These feathers, they're so thin that they work like, you know, when you see a rainbow and you got the light is going through the rain and it makes a rainbow because light is made up of all colors.
Right.
And so it hits the water and it breaks it into the rainbow colors. Well, essentially, that's a prism or a crystal or a diamond ring. You know what does that, makes that rainbow color.
Right.
These feathers have a translucent to them, so they both reflect the color from the light. Depending on the angle you're looking at them, just like a rainbow, it breaks the light up into either the red or the green or the bright orange colors that you see in their feathers. And so sometimes they'll be sitting there, and there's a particular one called a black-chinned hummingbird, which I've taken pictures of, and it looks like it has just this black set of feathers underneath its bill, and yet when it moves a certain direction, they turn bright, bright purple.
Yeah, wow, okay? Wow.
So, and that's the way the feathers are interacting with the light, and it breaks it into the color spectrum of the light, and that spectrum is what the feather then shows you, the purple or the green or the red.
When they do these neon lights, I wonder if there's a way we can have one of our sponsors' logos on a...
Oh, yeah.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, that would work. You can barely get a band on their little tiny leg, which we didn't talk about. We'll talk about their legs and some of their other...
We get like a little flyer that trails behind them, and we put it on their tail. Each one gets one word, and we just have to fly them in formation.
Yeah, well, from what Gordon says, trying to get them to work together, get one letter.
Just put one female in between each male.
There you go.
Welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And thank you for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. I'm Uncle Steve, along with co-host Mike Ford. We're featuring our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder. One thing that birders and Gordon have in common is they're very avid photographers and very good ones. And here, Gordon discusses the challenges of taking video and pictures of hummingbirds. Our guest is our science guy, Dr. Gordon Snyder, who shows us things about Alaska that we often miss, not knowing the science behind it. He helps us appreciate more of the environment we're surrounded by here in Alaska and what a fantastic place it is. Would you please give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Dr. Gordon Snyder.
This is like every time we try to make a transition, it comes in with three wheels on the cart.
You know, it's
a four-wheel cart.
You know, one of the things I was thinking of, Gordon, is when you and I were on that by the train tracks, and we were beautiful, quiet time, and
it was almost
serene.
Like you're watching golf commentary when you guys were there.
and then the train comes. And Steve's talking, and it's just drowning him out. As the train goes by, he says, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah, right. Well, what was so funny was Gordon was talking about how the reality changes when you look at certain things a certain way. He says, just like the reality is about to change here in just a minute. And this huge freight train comes through and blows the horn and just scared the sand out of me.
Right. Yeah.
I found that clip, Mike, on our podcast. I was flying through Seattle and spent a couple of days at Gordon's place, and he took me out to this point that's really a beautiful bay area, beautiful view, and he was talking about the orca whales and the gray whales that come through, and while he was talking to me about it, nearby is a train track that I completely was unaware until I looked up, and this huge freight train was coming by, and it blew off its horn right by us, and it's the loudest horn I've ever heard in my life, and took about 10 years off my life. So this is what it sounded like.
This April, there was a group of whale watching people, and they saw some orca whales, like, you know, half a mile away. They've been watching them feed on, you know, whatever they were feeding on with their activity. And then all of a sudden, these two gray whales came by, but no calves or anything, but huge gray whales. You know, these things are like second largest animal around right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, about 60 feet and 50 tons? Okay.
About as big as this train that's fixing to go by us.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have some new sound effects here.
Oh, it's all right. Holy crap.
Yeah.
So that's what happened to the gray whales. Well, that was a great story. I'm sure glad you guys got to hear that.
I was there the other day. I was sitting there waiting for, I ran into Brooklyn, my daughter, and other significant other walking. And so they were going to walk back to where I was parked at that little overlook. And while I was sitting there, I was noticing that about 20 or 30 yards away from me, there was a lot of hummingbird activity. This is the kind where, you know, they're mating. And so one dude will sit on the top of a branch and he's scouting around like he's guarding the spot. And then somebody else will come, and then they do these great flies up and dive down to try and impress the female with their prowess and expert flying skills. And so while I was waiting for them for about 10 or 15 minutes, I kept watching these guys fly up in the air and then fly down, and thought, there's no way, even with my maximum telephoto, you know, that I could ever catch these guys because they are so fast.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's what sort of over the last 6 months since you and I talked about them, I've been trying to figure out how to catch them on video better. And so I have some videos that I've shot where there's like 15 or 20 of them around one of the cabin feeders in the evening. And instead of fighting with each other, they're all trying to get their last sip of juice before they have to go sleep for the night. And so they're cooperating. In fact, they'll even share some of the feeder holes. And so that's really quite cool. You can hear all the limbs, wings flapping and the birds chirping and commotion, okay?
And just to set the scene here, you sent me and Mike a couple of videos that you took, and these were of hummingbirds that are around your place.
Yes.
And you use your iPhone. This is just off your cell phone, right?
Very amazing.
Right. Well, what happened is I tried these other videos, and they're terrific, but the birds are going so fast, they're just like watching them with naked eye. And if you search around, you can see a few of these guys with science cameras that have taken these slow-motion video shots. And I thought, hey, my iPhone, it's a 7 with the two lenses, so it can do slow motion. And, Steve, you're a video guy, so these are all common terms to you, but I'm learning the new terminology from video. Normal video, you shoot at like 30 frames per second. That's kind of like what your Android or your iPhone shoots when you're doing just regular video.
Yes.
And you know, digital cameras shoot around that, and you can go up and down a little bit. But to go to slow motion, you have to increase the number of frames per second. So then when you play it back, you're showing more frames, so things are showed slowly. So you go from 30 frames a second, and the next speed is, say, you know, three times faster, to 120 frames per second. So you've slowed them down like one third, so it's 33% slower, and you can begin to see something. Well, on the iPhone, and I think the same on the Android, these things will go up to 240 frames a second. And this is the little phone that you're holding in your hand.
Okay? Amazing.
So I was pretty stoked with that, but here's the problem. You know, when you're trying to shoot these things, that they just fly so rapidly, by the time you get there, nothing's in focus because they've been in and out of the screen so fast, even though it was shooting high speed, they might have been 5 inches or so away from your focus, and so they're just a blur. Mm-hmm. So the secret that I came up with, and I started doing this with a lot of my still shots, is positioning the feeders so that you had good lighting and good background. But all the feeders have, you know, like 4 or 6 little feeding ports around the bottom of the feeder. And so naturally, if you're sitting there with a camera pointed at it, like with my big telephoto, I might be 6 or 7 feet away, but they know there's this big dude sitting there, this big metal thing pressed in his face. So they want the juice. So they go to the back of the feeder so you can't see them very well, okay? To get the iPhone to work, you have to set it up right close, maybe within a foot or so of the feeder. But then you can't hold it there because you're too close. They never come. So you can use a little remote control. I use my Apple Watch, like I told you, with this little videos I sent, so I can tell it to start and stop. So I set it up on a little tripod, got it all squared away, and then they would fly and they'd go to the back of the feeder and I'd have nothing but a blur of a wing through the feeder or something. It was like, So what I learned with my stills, I applied to my little video that we shot just the other day. I took a tiny little yellow sticky, okay, just mm-hmm. like the ones you put notes on. And I wrote, you'll love this, I wrote closed. And I put those two yellow stickies on the two backside ports so that they would have to come around to the one port that was right where I had the camera set to look, and I had the focus locked so that once they came and got there, and if they stuck around, they'd be in focus. And so that's what really happened, is I tricked them by closing the back ports. The coolest thing is with the male one, is that when he flies up, they notice, what the heck, this feeder is different. Because like in the earlier talk, I told you that, I mentioned that they remember things. They remember the feeders, the locations. Mm-hmm. And so they come back to this feeder they were at just a half an hour ago. And they go, wait a minute, this isn't the same. There's this yellow thing there. And it doesn't have my feeding port.
See, I thought we were going to have a major breakthrough announcement here in the Big Alaska Show that you have discovered that hummingbirds can read.
Well, you can make that assumption. I have a sample of two.
Let me just kind of set this up, because I know we would jump around a little bit. But so you set up to video these hummingbirds, and you needed to get it where they would stay in a position that you could video them and do them in slow motion. Exactly. And we've got two clips that we're going to post our BigAlaskaShow.com website. So we're talking about these two little short videos. That how long is each one approximately, Gordon?
2 minutes, just a little over 2 minutes.
Okay.
And one is of a male Anna's, and that's the first one that I sent you guys. And that's where he comes around the backside of the feeder to normally feed, and he looks at it because it's got this little close sign on it. He goes, what? And he flies over around to the front and sees this camera, this iPhone camera, sitting on a tripod 6.5 feet off the ground, 12 inches from the feeder. And he comes over and he looks at it and he goes, what the hell is this? And he flies back and he says, oh, well, I'm going to feed. And then he starts sipping at the nectar. And that's when I get all the great slow motion of him going back and forth and the wings. And these are at 240 frames per second. And so if you mess with the software and reduce it 10% of that speed, you get them to where it's almost one wing beat per second. And it's sort of blurry because it's an iPhone, my gosh. However, it's just amazing. You can watch them use the little tweaks on their tail feathers. And the way that the pitches, when they're hovering, they're so fast at normal speed, you just see a blur. And then when you take a still photo, you're just lucky that you catch a shot with everything in focus.
The third time through I watched it, I just closed my eyes and I thought I was hearing helicopters.
Well, that's the other coolest thing is, okay, a hummingbird normally at 30 frames per second would have that brrrr sound, yeah, you know, that yeah. the wings make. And then they have this really high-pitched chirp that goes, tink, 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 kind of thing. Well, when you slow it down by running it at 240, it goes brrrr. And the chirps sound more like whale calls where you're going brrrr, brrrr, because you stretch the sound spectrum out, you know, so it's not the same sound.
One of the last times we talked about the bird legs.
I remember you saying something about, well, what do? They hop around. And I said, well, that's a good story. That's something we should talk about another point. In these videos, you can see when they're flying, they're like their little legs are just retracted up, you know, like if they were an airplane where they suck them back in the fuselage so they don't have wind drag. But what their feet do and only do is perch. They can't walk. They can't hop. They can only fly to the next spot. Even if it's only an inch away, they fly over to that spot and perch again.
I thought of a new job now. We could get hummingbird physical therapists.
Oh, really? Imagine. And you watch the wings, and if they ever got a sore wing, they're done. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet they're twisting their wings and hovering perfectly. They go forward, get a little sip, come back out. And you watch the pitches as they change, just like helicopter blades would change to hold it and hover, except they're doing it at breakneck lightning speed compared to the way we live. Everything they do is like 120 or 30 or 40, 50 times faster than us.
You've been studying hummingbirds. This has been an interest of yours as a scientist, Gordon. in this particular project, obviously you learned more about how to use your iPhone and way to trick hummingbirds, which I think is a genius thing. I mean, to outsmart a hummingbird. Is there something that you've learned through this process? Is there anything that you observed that you thought was interesting? Or
yes, as they fly in, you know, and they're like seagulls in a sense, you know, they fly over and when they make a sharp turn, they shoot a little excrement out. And I always thought that it'd be totally cool to get this picture of a cute little hovering, squirting around hummingbird taking a little aerial dump. And so I've gotten a couple of them on videos, but they're not in my frame. I hadn't gotten them into a focal point, but I could see that there's my next project.
The hummingbird crop dusting.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly. So, anyhow, those are things that you can see. The mere chance of catching it with your regular camera pushing the shutter is impossible. So,
if you taught this in junior high, this you'll catch every seventh grade boy's attention.
Anyway, that's our good buddy, Dr. Gordon Snyder.
Let's realize something. The light at the end of the tunnel was a train.
Oh, man.
Just glad that, you know, you weren't on the track.
We were close.
But we've been off the rails for years, so it's good.
Yeah.
It's all right.
That's our show. Mike, it's always a pleasure spending a Saturday morning with you. And to my baby girl, love you. And Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Gordon for joining us. We want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com. And Alaska Enterprise Solutions, they're your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska. You can visit them anytime at aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying through your tooth to Alaska Tales, it's got to be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.